What up, Pod Nation, Pod Maggots, Pod Nerds, Metal Nerds? We're here to reconvene.
Harry Potters,
Podheads. My name's Nate. Welcome to the Potty Slave Podcast, episode 142. Here with my homies, Anthony and Tony. How you guys doing?
Personally, I'm on cloud nine because NPR Nate has been deep sexed, apparently. NPR Nate is done.
Gone.
That was energy. I've been waiting for that energy for 142 episodes, so thank you.
It's in there. He just hides it when he has to, like, intro or do any of the... It's, all right, guys, we're back with another episode of the Potty of Slave Podcast. My name is NPR Nate, and I'm gone now. Get the fuck out of here.
I have a theory. Maybe it's genre specific. You know, we're talking to a metal dude today, so maybe I'm like amped.
That's true. It could be.
I could be shooting myself in the foot, like we talk about metal pretty much every episode.
We do that a lot. That's true. Well, yeah, we had a good one today. We talked to Justin Foley. He is the guitarist of the new band Libeca, as well as the drummer for Killswitch, and has been, you know, in and around heavy music for the better part of 30 years. So really fun conversation with Justin. But yeah, we get into it with him about a bunch of different topics, being, you know, guitarist and being a drummer and coming at it from different angles, being fans of Cats, you know, all that fun stuff that you get with metal guys.
Yeah, man, Justin was great. He, like you said, legacy of music, Killswitch, blood has been shed, now Libeca carrying the torch, and we're going to get into it right now.
What's up, everybody? Tony here. Thanks for clicking on the episode today. Thanks for checking us out. If you like this conversation, go back and check out some of our other conversations. We've had Justin's bandmate, Jesse Leach, Killswitch Engage, back earlier this year. We did a whole series on the Tattoo the Earth Festival that made its re-emergence this past summer, you know, with Derek Maine of Sepultura, Brian Fair of Overcast, Shadows Fall, a bunch of fun conversations surrounding that. And yeah, other stuff too. Peanut from 311, Frank Turner, Benny Horowitz of the Gaslight Anthem. There's a lot of really cool conversations back there. So please go check us out at PodioSlave.com. You'll find all of it there. And really appreciate you checking us out. Thanks. All right, Justin, thank you for joining us today. Really excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for wanting to talk.
Hell yeah.
So we, in prepping for this, we're always, you know, digging into the music, digging into the album art, digging into all that stuff. And we noticed your band's slogan is drink beer and pet cats.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah. It's so good. It's so damn good.
So it's funny to us. And we've kind of talked about this over the course of our pod's life, which is almost, you know, pushing 3 years now. And the more heavy music kind of makes its way into the mainstream, and I think that's happened more and more as the time has gone on here, the more you're going to find kind of that metalhead next door who's also a fan of cats and also a fan of, you know, craft beer and whatever else there is. So how does that come about? How did you guys come about with that slogan? It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, they have that book, Metal Guys and Their Cats, right? There's that book. Really bummed I wasn't reached out for that, because I feel like over the years I've really gone above and beyond to try to get my love of cats out there. But
wait, is that a thing? Is that a real thing?
That's a real thing. Yeah, there's a book, like Metal Dudes and Cats. It's, there'll be like a dude in like full corp paint, you know, like, and just holding, like snuggling his cat, just holding his cat.
That's amazing.
I think I know where you can find this. It sounds like an Urban Outfitters staple.
Newbury Comics, yeah.
Sky Mall Magazine.
I think that slogan came from just a random design that actually our Killswitch's stage manager, Josh, that's been with us for like ever and ever and ever. And he just like whipped something up real quick. And he's like, here, what do you think of this? And he had that on there. So I need to give him credit for that. And we're like, oh my God, perfect. And there was like the cat like crushing a beer can in the front of it. And it looked really good. So
it's so great.
I think that's pretty sweet. Sweet slogan for the band, and pretty much sums up exactly what we're all about.
So is it all everyone in the band? Because I feel like there'd be some tension, right? If one guy's not a cat guy, like if Nate's like, let's have a little dog vibe, and Tony doesn't like dogs, you're like, nah, we're not getting that out.
Well, then you can't be in the band if you don't right. like that. Like that's pretty much how it goes. When we were looking for a drummer forever, we were just joking that instead of anybody sending in like drum audition tapes, they just send in pictures of them and their cats and would decide based on their pictures if they love their cats enough to be able to join the band. We didn't actually do that, but we probably should have.
That's hilarious. Swipe right or swipe left.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that because it is totally, it's different. It's not, you know, it's not just here we are, you know, we're posing, we're hard, we're a metal band. No, we're also cat lovers and we're people. We have layers.
Absolutely. And, you know, the band name comes from cats and the record cover and everything. And I really wanted to do the vinyl pressing. I wanted or would have loved for it to have been like tabby stripe color.
Nice.
But apparently it doesn't exist yet in the vinyl world. Hopefully soon, maybe for the second record.
Nice. Yeah, we're all vinyl heads. And yeah, you could do a lot with that cat vibe, like do a big gatefold. And actually, that's where you showcase what would have been in that book.
Right. Well, inside, we actually do have the pictures inside for the three of us, because we did all that before we had James in the band drumming. So I guess the band photo or just three individual shots of us with one of our cats is inside the layout too. So we pretty much did do that.
Nice. And you're, if you've clicked on the episode and you're listening to this right now, we've probably used one of those photos. So go look at that right now.
So Justin, cats aside, Killswitch Engaged, you guys just got off a pretty massive tour, man. Lamb of God, Baroness, Spirit Box. How was that? And you know what's going on in the touring world?
It was great. We've toured with Lamb of God forever and ever. The first tour I ever did with Killswitch was with them. It was the Headbangers Ball tour in 2003, and we're both still going at it, still playing together. It's pretty fun. They had a really sick show too. They had a bunch of pyro. It looked awesome. I love fire. Fire looks so good on stage. So yeah, it was really cool. And it was fun, man. It was fun to kind of mix it up with the bands a little bit too. A pretty diverse bill. Really good shows. It was a blast. And everyone in the world is out touring right now because, you know, pandemic is back to a place where shows can feel normal and all that stuff. So every single band that lost all that time is out there on the road. To do a tour like that, that was a pretty big tour, and it was going into big places, and having people show up was a pretty good thing. It was a lot of fun too. And it's easy. The easiest gig in the world is to be a main support band.
Oh yeah. And why is that?
Earlier, you know, like all the pressure isn't on you and you get to be done earlier in the day. So it's kind of nice.
You're right. There were some big ass venues. Like the Boston date was at that new Fenway, MGM yeah. Fenway. But yeah, it's a weird in the middle of, yeah, it's kind of, we'll call it post-pandemic, but at the same time, everyone's out there. So you got to choose where you put your dollars. And I mean, that Fenway venue's like 5,000 people. That's insane.
That was a neat place. I mean, I hate the Red Sox, but it was still cool to be in there and be underneath the stadium and see, like, it was built like almost underneath where the bleachers are, really. So you kind of can see that shape when you're inside, which is pretty interesting. And that is crazy too, because there's a pretty big House of Blues right across the street from it.
Right.
Luckily there wasn't a game, or I think there was a show there, but there wasn't a game that, I don't know how they managed to have shows at either place on game days. It must be just a nightmare in that area for load in and everything. But yeah, it was pretty fun. I was so mad that they had to put a little Red Sox tag on your bag when you like went in. I was just like, oh God, can't wait to get this thing off.
As a Red Sox, lifelong Red Sox fan, that makes me chuckle. I know you're a Yanks fan. You're going to be a Yanks fan then, right?
Yeah.
You're smart. Justin's smart.
I grew up in Connecticut on the other side of the line. The line has since shifted farther and farther south. But when I was there, it was Central Connecticut was, I would say, more Yanks than Red Sox. I think it's definitely changed, but that's what happens. You're on one side of the fence when you're in that state.
Well, I just met you 10 minutes ago, but we share a very special bond. We are both Yankees and Celtics fans. It's a rare breed. It's like a rare cat. You know, it's like when you see it, you're like, all right, give him the head nod. And it's rare, man. So that's awesome.
It's the albino tiger.
I don't want to kill that too much. I don't know if I would call myself a Celtics fan.
Oh.
I don't really have much of an NBA team. I'm more of a college basketball guy going to UConn and everything. But I did root for all the Celtics teams in the 80s, and I wanted them to beat the Lakers. So I wanted Bird to win,
that counts.
All that. So But since then, I haven't really kept track. It was cool when Kemba was there. I feel like I, you know, should have an NBA team, but it's just never really stuck. I don't know why.
Well, we'll take you as Celtics fans. You can join up with us.
That's a beautiful jersey.
You don't want to take the Knicks. I mean, come on.
I know I haven't done that. I could have done that when Kemba went there, but it didn't work out so well either. I think if the Knicks had drafted Caron Butler way back then I would have. They had a spot and they passed him.
Like, Tough okay. Juice, right? That's his nickname, Tough Juice? That's it. That's right. He was a heck of a player.
That was his book. The book, yeah.
We know sports nerdery too. We can do this all day.
Cool. That's great. I love it.
You got off tour with Killswitch, and now you're kind of back out talking Libica. So that's why we have you. We wanted to talk about the record a little bit. That came out back in, the middle of September now? So a couple months ago.
Yeah, it came out while I was on that tour with Killswitch. And then we did a show a week after that. Killswitch had a one-off show that we were headlining in Albany. And, you know, fill it up with whatever support you fill it up with. And I was able to scam the guys into letting Libica open that show. So that was a lot of fun. I scammed them again into letting us open up those three shows in December. I can't wait for those. They're gonna be huge.
That's awesome. Nice.
Oh, is that one of the Palladium shows?
Yeah. Yeah. Those three shows at Sayreville and Long Island and the Palladium. And I was able to get a little more nepotism action going in. Get off
that show. Anthony, I smell a road trip.
Yeah, we live in Maine. Nate's out in SoCal, but we're all originally from Maine, and Tony and I are still here.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, hey, we may hit you up.
Which part of Maine?
Southern Maine.
Yeah, Portland area. Greater Portland area.
We went through there with the last tour of the August Burns Red and Light Porch.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, and Joel came down with COVID like the day before that show or something like that.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to get those guys to fill in a little bit. Got some of those dudes to help us out. But yeah, so I remember very well just being there and being like, huh, how are we going to pull this one off tonight? But it worked.
I'll tell you, I was there. You guys didn't miss a beat. You guys were just as tight as you guys ever were. So I don't know if that's kudos to the fill-in or a knock on your OG guy.
No, thanks. Adam and Joel definitely have a certain drunk chemistry. They like to say they're not the best guitar duo in the world, but they are the drunkest. And when they earn that sweet spot, they can really play super tight together.
So when setting out to put Libica together, was it always going to be an instrumental project, or did it just kind of start as an instrumental and then you just kept it that way? How did that come about?
Yeah, it was. I always wanted to do that. Start a band that didn't have any vocals. I can't say for sure that all the songs started out that way, though. I think some of the demos for those songs I originally thought would possibly have vocals for them. I didn't know if they would. I just come up with a lot of garbage, and sometimes it's Killswitch garbage, and sometimes it's just actual trash garbage. And then there's a bunch of other stuff that I'm like, well, I don't really know what this would be. You know, I don't have a project for this or an outlet for this yet, and I kind of just sit on it for a while. And that's where some of the stuff at the very beginning, when I started jamming with the other guys, that's where some of that stuff came from. So I can't say that necessarily was originally thought of as instrumental, but for sure when we did start the band, I was like, yeah, I want to do something that doesn't have any singer, you know, just music, because I like tons of bands like that, and I just wanted to try it, see if it would work out.
That was actually a question of mine. Were there bands in mind? I mean, people reference, like, you know, This Will Destroy You, and, you know, those instrumental bands as being an influence to their work. Is there certain artists that you were kind of steering towards that sound or that realm?
Yeah, Caspian's a huge one for me. I absolutely love Caspian. Maybe my favorite band. Mogwai's another one. Neither of them, I would say, are super heavy in the metal sense, though. So I kind of wanted to take some vibes that those bands have and almost metal it up a little bit, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Was there, I'm curious, like when you start to form the songs, like you have the song structure, you know, you start to record, any temptation to throw vocals on it?
Not yet, but I won't 100% rule it out in the future, but yeah, no, not yet. For one, you got to find someone else.
Right.
Old search. Yeah. My voice isn't exactly a pleasing sounding voice to sing, and I have no interest in singing. So yeah, that would have to happen But no, you just sort of go into it, and I was just hoping that everything would be interesting enough on its own. And you try to sort of write something that could be a hook that isn't like a vocal hook, you know, doesn't have to have words. And just trying to make sure that you're doing that, and that's something interesting enough to kind of become an earworm, I guess, you know, something like that. So that's sort of where the focus came from. And it's also cool because you can layer stuff like crazy and not have to worry about getting in the way of what vocals might do. Because when you're writing stuff, there's eventually going to be a vocal track on it. And you always have to be like, oh, well, you can't put too much here because you have to leave room for vocals. And doing this, you don't have to worry about that. You can just stack things like crazy and just like leave no room for anything else in musically. And it's kind of a fun way to approach it.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that totally makes sense. I mean, listening to any type of band where there isn't vocals, you're way more focused on the instrument, obviously, and to think about it when you're writing, that's wild to me. It had just never crossed my mind. But yeah, you could be a little fuller in some of your tracks, right?
Yeah, and I guess one example is the last song on the record, Charyu. It's sort of at the end of it. It just keeps going as far as I could get it to go. And I think that, you know, if you're leaving a vocal spot there, you would sort of write the music, and then you'd just sort of be a little bit unfulfilled until you heard the vocals, you know. Whereas this, you could just really, whatever it was happening at that moment, I could just stack it and see if I liked it, stack it, stack it, stack it, and then it just sort of becomes what it was. And then it wasn't going to change. You knew like it wasn't going to change. You knew a part wouldn't have to come out when there was a vocal part on it afterwards. And it's sort of it's kind of a different freedom in terms of coming up musically with ideas.
I've never thought of it that way. Like, I'll listen to it a little differently, and it must be freeing, because on the flip side, there's bands out there with two vocalists. So they're, you know, they're tailoring the music to how the vocals are going to sound. So when you strip that down to no vocals, you just let the music breathe. It's probably the most raw music, you know, that you can come up with. So I will listen to it with different ears.
Yeah, interesting. But the funny thing is too, I think if you poll most people that listen to music, especially just casual music listeners, which is like everybody, everyone gravitates toward vocals and the lyrics and the song and everything, and like what the song is about or what it means. And that's how you can make such a strong connection to music and how people get really sucked into it. So trying to get that from people without vocals and attaching whatever feelings people might attach to music without that is a different challenge also. I mean, you can like lots of people hear a song and they attach their certain feelings to it, or if they're going through something at that particular time, it could really strike something with them based on what the vocals are about, just really inspire them. We don't have that with an instrumental band. You don't have that necessarily, but you could still be almost more like a soundtrack for what somebody's going through at a certain time, and they could latch onto it that way a little differently.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit more open to interpretation with regards to how does that song translate to you? Because you always hear like, oh, this band has such cryptic lyrics, but at the end of the day, you can kind of figure it out. When it's just completely instrumental, you're kind of filling in almost ad lib, like this is how this song is making me feel, and these are like kind of the words that are flowing in my head. Kind of a cool listener experience in that regard.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you just hope at all that anyone's going to find something that draws them to the music and keeps them there. And I know that I've heard Jesse before talk about not wanting, Howard too, I've heard both of them talk about not wanting to describe their words too much, because they don't want to change a song for somebody, that somebody might have heard a song and they feel something one way, and then either of them said exactly what they were thinking about or going through, it might change it for that person. You know, you want everyone to have their own relationship or experience with the song, I would say.
Yeah, it's good to have some sort of vagaries there, because you want people to put their own pieces on it, but you want a lot of people to put their own pieces on it so that they're resonating with the music, as opposed to just, it's exactly about this, and you can only like this if you're going through this.
Right. That's not there at all with this. Anything you want, you can attach to it.
So there's a couple differences, right, from previous projects to this one. One is the instrumental nature, but the second thing is you're behind the axe. You're not behind the kit. So I don't know the answer to this. Had you been playing guitar for a while, or is this kind of new for this project?
I have been. not a lot, like very much as a hobby, just sort of, I don't know how to describe it. I wasn't any very serious about it. I just sort of had it and noodled around all the time and tried the right stuff, tried to figure out other songs that I like. And with like demo stuff for Killswitch, like I'd bring in some demos sometimes for ideas, whatever. And most of the time it would be something that I would say, I kind of have this idea and you guys are good at guitar, so make this better. It's kind of where it ended up. But then, yeah, I mean, it was all, a lot of it was driven by being forced to have nothing to do and by the pandemic and having all this time and really getting into it. I'm like, okay, well, I've kind of always thought about this. I have all the time in the world to do it now. And it was embarrassing to realize how much about guitar I didn't know after playing in bands for almost 30 years with guitar players. And just being like, what pickups make a difference? What do you mean? Like, I just like all kinds of stupid stuff that I should have learned a long time ago. But I try to write to your own strengths, I guess. So trying to figure out what I could and couldn't do on the guitar. I'm definitely not a shredder. There's no shreddy parts on this, you know. Not going to be ripping solos or anything, but just trying to write some cool heavy parts and trying to write like some melodic parts. And I always really loved harmonized guitar in old metal, like early Metallica shit that's all harmonized and awesome. Thin Lizzy parts, like that kind of stuff I've always loved, and trying to bring that into this whole instrumental thing too is something that I was trying to focus on with guitar.
Any temptation to jump behind the kit at all in this project?
Well, I had to do it to record because we didn't have a drummer yet.
Oh, there you go. So there was that. It was not a temptation. It was this necessity.
Yeah, we didn't have anyone to play drums yet. So I had to do that. But it's been, not really. Not since that was done. And since we got James in the band. Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to sit there and play guitar and let him lug a drum set in. Which is fine. And it's cool. It's like something else I didn't really expect was to, it changes the entire way you're listening to the people you're playing with. You're playing guitar rather than playing drums. It's like an entirely different thing that I guess I expected somewhere, but I didn't expect it to the extent that it's happened. And everything's just much different feel. Listening is harder to do. I guess I was so used to listening the other way that listening from a different perspective is more challenging, but it's fun. It's great. You always want to, when you're a musician, you always want that stuff. You always want those new challenges. It's been a really fun one.
Plus, feel-wise, you have these metal strings like blistering your fingers instead of drumsticks. Right? You're like, oh, fuck, this is harder than I thought. Fuck.
yeah, totally. One of the other funny things is when you're way into something and you're playing drums and you're just wailing on them, and then you're playing guitar and you're way into something, you have nothing to wail on. You just have like this pick and this little motion. You have to be like, I want to freak out right now. But I have to do this real fine motor skill thing. I can't just bash like I want to.
Right. That muscle memory that you get from being a drummer for all that time to, okay, I've got to pull that back in a little bit. I got to rein that in. I can't just go ham.
Yeah, exactly. Drums sound great when you bash them. When you're hitting the low string like this, as hard as you can, it whacks it unbelievably out of tune and everything sounds terrible. So it's a little different.
It gives a lot of context to like metal dudes that are playing piano. You're like, fuck, dude, you got to bang your head, right? You can't just sit there.
I don't know how to headbang. I don't know how to do it standing up. I haven't figured it out yet.
Well, I find it so amazing, guitarists that can literally just walk and play. Like I think we've all picked up guitar at some point in our lives. The fact that people can actually walk and play and jump and play and have it still sound pretty good is insane.
So far, I feel very much like a statue. And I'm trying to think, okay, you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing. And statues, you got to do something, but then I don't know what it is. But then you're just like, well, you have to look natural. You don't want to look like you're trying to do something. None of that stuff ever happened with drumming. So it's all stupid. I can't figure it out.
So when you're writing music for this, because you were doing both in kind of double duty, are you writing one part and thinking of the other at the same time, or are you writing a guitar part and then, all right, I'm going to put drums on this, I'll figure that out later?
Kind of that second thing. Yeah, most of the time I'll figure it out later. A lot of it comes from just, I have a ton of like voice memos on my phone where I'm just sitting around the house with a guitar and I just come up with an idea. I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. And I just voice memo it real quick. And then I'll just go have a whole file of voice memos. And sometimes I'll just go through them. And if something is like, oh, that one's cool, maybe I can work that out. A lot of times all the guitar stuff comes first. And then I might have rough ideas of how I want the drums to go. But what I did before was I would have that kind of mapped out, and then I would sit down and just, what makes sense? Oh yeah, that makes sense. And sometimes it's super easy and it's just like, oh yeah, of course that's what it does. And other times it's like, yeah, I'm not sure what to do with this.
Is that the same in Killswitch and other projects too, or?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same. Yeah, I would say it's about the same in the other stuff too. I don't think I've ever like thought of a drum groove or a drum beat first and then built that way up. I can't think of anything I've ever done that's been that way. It's always kind of the melodic thing is first. Now, what I really want to do with this band going forward is not do that by myself at all. We have all these other people and we have a drummer. So I want to just sort of get together and you know, figure out parts as a group, which hasn't started yet because there's no reason to do the record just. But it's something I'm looking forward to doing also.
I mean, we've only been chatting for, you know, 25 minutes or whatever, but just hearing you talk about the project, I feel like you'd really accomplished what you kind of set out to do. Like there's the heavy, there's the melody, and like on the track, I think it's pronounced Palatial.
Yep.
I love the intro. It's like quiet. And then there's like that tease of that like moshy breakdown, like 15 seconds. And then it kind of gets into the groove and then it goes back to that. Like the 4 minute mark, I'm like, yeah, I love this. But there's something for everyone in there. I love that.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. That's I think that's a good, there's a few songs that I think are good representations kind of what the band is about as a whole. And I think that's probably the best one of that. I think like if there was a song to be like, what's this band all about? That song kind of checks a lot of the boxes off, I think. And it's cool to hear you say that too.
Is that one of your favorites too, or?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really fun one to play. It's got like that heavy part, like you said. It's got a real soft kind of middle section with sort of spacey, floaty parts in it. It's got the dueling guitars, the Bill and Ted's part in the middle.
Yep,
so that's right. It's kind of got a bunch of that stuff in it, so it's cool.
Yeah, that song actually in particular reminded, like as soon as I heard it, I just started having these visions of like European festivals, like the sea of people just fucking loving that shit. You did mention a few shows on the books. Are you going to be going over to Europe or?
I was just going to say, sign me up for that. If you're booking any festivals.
Nice.
We would love to. We desperately want to go out and tour right now because we're so far, I've just done, with the exception of that one Albany show, we've just done a few local shows down here in Florida and, you know, that's it. But we want to get on the road and like, that's when I think you really become a band when you tour and you play every day. And that's a whole different thing. So I think to get to that, whatever next level or wherever bands go, we definitely need to do that.
So we talked a little bit about the slogan and the album artwork. So when you put it, like, whose cat is that? First of all, on the album artwork, is that yours? Is that?
That's Joey's.
Okay.
Cat. That's Stripey. Stripey's nice. On the cover. Stripey is also featured in the video for Ferment, which we kind of did. It's kind of like one of those pandemic videos, you know, nothing fancy, just all of us at our house plants in the park. So Stripey is getting pretty famous.
I like it. So when you're going to make that, obviously you've all come at it from the cat lover side of things, but to put it on, you know, put Stripey on the cover, you had to kind of bandy that about a little bit, right? That wasn't probably just, let's just do this.
We were just like, you know what? Let's just go for it.
I love it. All right.
we were kind of thinking of like record covers. And we're like, it seemed like everything that I was thinking of, I suddenly went, oh, that sounds like way too post-rock cliche. Like, oh, some landscape of something. And all of it, I was just like, I was just seeing covers in my head that I had already seen from bands that we wanted to do something else. We were just like, all right, if we're gonna go cat, let's just go cat, go full cat and do this.
That's so good.
And there's not many, there's only one that comes to mind. It's like the Adrenaline Screaming Cat on the Deftones like EP. That's it. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, I think I looked, I searched once like cats on album covers or something like that. There were a few that I recognized. I'm like, oh yeah, there's that one. I just know it before, but there's like not a ton.
So when you guys put it together, the album was put out by Metal Blade. So you bring it to Metal Blade and they're like, all right, good. Or are they like, what the hell's going on?
No, we had no idea. We tracked it, we recorded it and mixed it and had everything done before we had a label or agreement with anyone. And then we were just like, okay, well, let's send it out there and see who's interested, you know, or no one's interested. I don't know. I had no idea. And Metal Blade was interested in that. I obviously, since Killswitch got Metal Blade, I didn't expect them to do it just out of like anything. And I also didn't want them to do it as like a favor or just like, oh, you know, whatever, it's cool because he's on this label, we'll just do it for him. I wanted them to genuinely want to put the album out. And they did. People at the label were way into it. And it was just super easy. And obviously, it's an amazing label and it's an honor to be on that label. So we were like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it.
And that's the thing. At the end of the day, they're a business. They're not going to just do favors, you know, so that's cool.
I would hope not. But you know, you just you just want people to see the project for what it is and like it, what it is separately, and not sort of be too biased based on the fact that I'm in another band that's on the label. And I think totally that's the way it went down.
Was there anybody else interested? Were you, or is it Metal Blade all the way?
I'm not so sure. I think there might have been, but we have a good. I mean, obviously. I have a good relationship with them, and the way that everything really first started was I started talking about the demos that I kind of had with our Killswitch managers, Kenny and Vaughn from Unchained. And they've been our managers forever. And they were like, yeah, you know, anytime you do something, yeah, just send us demos. We're curious what's up. And I had sent it to them, and then I was talking to them. I just wanted to get on the phone with them to talk about like how to proceed with a new band, if they had any advice or whatever. And they started saying, as we were talking about it, they started saying, we can do this and we can do that. And I was like, so does that mean you guys want to manage us too? And they're like, oh yeah, we love this. This is great. We're into it. So I'm like, okay, cool. And they have an awesome relationship with Brian at Metal Blade. So I think since they're so close, once Metal Blade was like, yeah, we're interested, it sort of was just like, that's kind of just where it went. It was just kind of got easy from there. Although I have since discovered that Sergeant House, which is also an awesome label, there's an Instagram page called Sergeant Cat House, and they just have record. Like, they're all pictures of like a cat sitting next to a record of like a Sergeant House band. So
that's so cool.
That almost would have been too perfect.
I'm curious about the how are you going to pull off two bands? How are you gonna do this, Justin? He's like, I don't know yet. I don't know.
Well,
I haven't picked a side yet.
I just hope there's enough time in schedules. Obviously, there might be some conflicts that would be a bummer, but yeah, there's enough time to do it. So I mean, so far nobody's really beaten down Ledvika's door to go out on gigantic tours all over the place. So it's working itself out so far. But I think there's enough time. Killswitch, we tour a decent amount, but we're not going crazy. And we also understand that we don't want to over-tour. So there's enough time in the schedule. Like, none of us want to be out there for, you know, gigantic long stretches where there's always going to be enough time with that. Yeah, I mean, Adam and Jesse are doing Times of Grace stuff. They're pulling it off. Mike's got Death Ray and he's got Overcast playing. I remember when we were together, I think before the last tour, just to like run through some songs, Mike was like, oh my God, I have three bands worth of shows coming up. My brain is exploding with riffs. I can't keep all straight.
Yep.
But he's making it work too. So it'll happen.
I mean, there's ways to do it, right? Because a lot of people shit on like Maynard, like, dude, he's all distracted. He's not doing Tool. It's like, well, no, I've seen tours out here where he's doing Tool in a Perfect Circle on the same festivals. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's a nice problem to have, two giant bands to try to
true, right?
To try to manage your time between. But yeah, I'll take that problem. Bring it on.
Yeah. And I mean, the more people hear the record and get, you know, on board, I think you'll have a little more of that problem coming going forward here. So, because the record's good.
Thanks. I hope so. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's funny. We had Jesse on this podcast back in the spring. In a question, I'm laughing. I asked him. I said, "Would you ever take Times of Grace out on open for Killswitch?" And his answer was hell no, because he wouldn't do that to his voice.
Yeah.
But you're in a lucky position where you can hit the drums and, you know, strum the guitar. So that's pretty cool.
There's no way he would physically be able to do that. I mean, there's no chance. I don't even know, like, let's say a couple shows, I think even that's too much, you know, forget a tour. I think even like a couple shows, because it would be, it's a dangerous thing. And he's had vocal issues in the past too. So it's like super, he's got to be really on top of it to make sure everything goes well. Yeah, I'm not even doing the same instrument. I'm doing two different instruments. So it's a piece of cake. Yeah. Whatever. Easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those, like you said, beating those drums, though, I'm sure you get tired. So having to save that. If you're opening, playing the guitar, keeping it down a little bit, it's like, I got to conserve that energy because I'm going to go ham later on the drums. So
there was something I didn't quite anticipate when we did do that Albany show, was the adrenaline rush and the adrenaline come down from the first one. And maybe it's just because I'm a little extra amped up to play guitar. And I was incredibly nervous to play guitar in front of people. And I don't get nervous playing drums anymore, really. But when, guitar, I was like terrified to go up there and play. And then after that, I was like, okay, great. That went awesome. And then we had to play a set. And during the set, I was like, okay, I'm kind of, during the drumming, I was like, all right, I think I'm in my special reserve tank of adrenaline right now. It's not what it usually is.
It's cool to hear you say that, because we would never fucking know in the crowd that you were like nervous as fuck, like on there trying to figure it out.
Oh, guitar, man, I was shit very expect that. I'm even just thinking about the Palladium show, I'm terrified.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys will crush that. That's a cool venue to do that, especially with that fan base that'll be there for Killswitch. So
it is neat, because that's such a hometown place for us, and like all the most memorable shows pretty much that we've ever had have been in that place. So it'll be really interesting to be at a different part of the stage, to get a whole different perspective of what that room's all about.
A lot of history in that room. And if we go to the show in December for almost all your projects, like we've seen Killswitch there. I saw Blood Has Been Shed upstairs there, nice. Metal Hardcore Fest, and then Libica. So I'm stoked to, let's just go, Tone.
I'm in. You twist my arm.
Okay. That's not too far from Southern Maine. Not bad at all, right?
Nah, a couple hours, depending on the traffic. 495 can suck, but
yeah,
it's all right.
Yeah.
We know what going in, so it's all right.
Yeah. I've even played there with the pre-Blood Has Been Shed band at the Metal Fest a few times.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's been tons of different shows in that place.
I love Worcester because it's a time capsule. It doesn't change. It just defies time. It's so fucking crazy.
Especially where the Palladium is. Nothing is different. when we did that live show there during the pandemic, we were all just like, it's exactly the same as it always.
Just that hill. Just the big hill. The whole city's a So on the Killswitch front, or even Blood Has Been Shed front, I think when we spoke with Jesse a few months back, he said you guys were in the very prelim stages of writing music. Is that still going on? Or
yeah, it's still fairly prelim, I would say, but we got a bunch of ideas together and we're smashing some riffs together, trying to hammer out some songs. I know he's doing a lot of writing, so just kind of it's kind of in that sort of very beginning phase before anything's really shown itself to kind of show you where the direction of the record's going to go. It's just sort of in the early stages of it, but it's cool. It's about that time. I think 2019 is when the last one came out. So yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get some new tunes out there.
Nice. Do you, when you're in the process of writing stuff for Libica and there's Killswitch stuff, I know you were putting stuff together and it didn't have a home, but now that there are two homes for things, are you writing for one or the other in the moment, or are you writing stuff and then figuring out where it goes after?
It's mostly that. It's mostly just sort of writing stuff. There are times when I try to get myself in, I guess, the Killswitch mindset, when I know we're gonna be going off after stuff, and I'll maybe try to like just see what's in the more metally range. But yeah, we even wanted to do some faster stuff lately. We're all just kind of have the fast bug that we're trying to get out, and that's not one of my strengths. It's the fast riffy stuff on guitar for sure. So yeah, it's sort of you can probably listen to some stuff from the last couple records, and if it's not riffy, you can be like, that's probably one of my ideas. Probably nice. Tell.
I'm just amazed, like, Justin, you must be just thinking of riffs and drum beats all day, like almost like a chef just concocts recipes. And like, you know, I don't know, I'm not a musician, so when you have like a dual threat like that, it's just it's a different species to me.
Thanks. I don't know, it's just fortunately Killswitch has afforded me the time to be able to do that, because you know, it's been a successful band where we've been able to just be able to be musicians and have the time to be musicians. So it's a very lucky thing. So it's got to make the most of it, you know?
Right on. Yeah, man, I'm jealous. I'll never be a musician. I can't keep a beat for my life. Neither can Nate either. He's terrible at drums.
Terrible. That's why we do this.
Yeah, we just we talk about it. Who knows if we're good at this either, but we're better at this than we would be had we picked up some instruments.
Justin, you're nervous on stage?
Yeah, on guitar so far, yes, very much so. But drumming, not almost never. Sometimes, yes, if we're doing a song that maybe we haven't played in forever, or maybe if I feel like we're slightly under-rehearsed for that song, then I'll be a little nervous for certain ones. And there are certain ones that are tough. Every now and then I just blow a part for no reason. Then I just blow the same part every night for like 5 nights in a row, and I have no idea why I keep blowing the part. And then I'm like, here comes the part you're gonna blow, and then I blow the part again.
That's interesting. Especially when you know you're gonna do it.
Yeah, it's just like, why is this so stupid? I played this song 1,000 times, I've never done this before. 3 days in a row. What's going on?
Going from Worcester Palladium to SoFi Stadium opening for Slipknot, you know, it's got to be nerve-wracking. I mean, I can only imagine.
I was watching the that was the like last show of that tour, right? That soccer
Knot Fest. Yeah, yeah. 2021, I think.
Yeah, I was watching the MLS final, and I was like, wait a minute, this is a stadium that that last show was in. I'm like, this is fucking crazy. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And you know, sometimes you're sitting there at like Download Festival and you're just like, oh no, I gotta go out there. Okay. The nerves kick in a little bit, but it's not too bad. And then once you start playing, it's fine.
Wow. Yeah. Different world.
It's what I'm comfortable doing. If I was doing anything like talking in here, I feel nervous. And I feel like I'm not good at this and normal at it, but I feel like I'm normal and can play drums. So that's kind of where it is.
Right on. All right, Justin, we appreciate your time today. Go check out the debut album from Libeca, Metal Blade Records. I'm going to throw my standout tracks, Ascend, Palatial, Octavist, Killer. All those songs are killer. The whole album's killer. Go check it out. And we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys very, very much for having me and talking about this record. I'm just really happy that it's out. Hope people dig it.
Thanks, man.
Awesome.
Thanks, appreciate Justin. That.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast, YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us $1, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.